Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, folks. Beep. Get ready. Things are continually changing in the world of servicing. That is the case for sure. And we're going to be talking with Mitch Kider later in the broadcast about all the changes in servicing. We've been doing, as you know, a series of broadcasts on loan servicing, and we're going to continue that discussion. We have this broadcast and one more after that. Next week we have David Allison on. It's going to be good to have him on talking about subservicers, their role. But Mitch Kider is going to be on later on in the broadcast. We actually pre-recorded that segment. He's traveling, he's at the secondary conference, so we pre-recorded it. Also, Alice Alvey is going to go over all the regulation. There's so much going on that we just carved out some space in the Hot Topic segment to go over all the regulations. So we got a great lineup of great broadcast for you. We appreciate our sponsors, United Guaranty and Ala Mode. Good to have them be sponsors. United Guaranty, click on their website. Go to the link on our website, Lincoln on Lending. Go to the link in the upper right-hand corner. Click on it. Check out all the programs they have going on. It's their 50th anniversary. Good to see them strong and in the market, wanting to do so much to strengthen and help get this economy and housing on the right track. So appreciate United Guaranty. Joe Farr, let's get into what's going on in the market. Appreciate your involvement each and every week on this. Tell everybody, this is May 9th. I forgot to do that at the beginning. I always do that so people, when they listen on a download basis, know which broadcast am I listening to, because they downloaded me, want to listen to it. Some people said listen to it multiple times. But, Joe, let's talk about today, MBS prices. What's
I think we need to clarify it's May 6th, Dave.
Did I say? What did I say?
You said May 9th.
I said May 9th. Yeah. It is May 6th. Thank you for the clarification. Those typos. All right. So anyway, yes, thank you.
today we started out, I mean, there's no news this week. I'll be getting into that in a minute. But we've just dropped to the low for the day. We're now down about 3/32 on the day, and that could be 4 or 5/32 below where some people issued prices this morning. And so the more aggressively priced investors may be considering issuing an unfavorable price change right now. So be on the alert for that. And can't really point to an event that's caused the drop. It's just a moving market, just a little bit volatile.
That's interesting. Well, let's get into what happened last week.
That was a volatile week last week toward the end, anyway.
In contrast.
Yeah. For the week, we lost about a half a point in price, and all that came on Friday, Dave. The jobs report was announced, and jobs were a little better than expected for April. But the surprise came in that the revisions to February and March were significantly increased. 114,000 additional jobs were added to February and March, and the unemployment rate was came in a little lower than last month, and so it was a very good jobs report. And jobs are, as we all know, they're the key indicator of the strength of the economy, and certainly they impact mortgage rates in a significant way. And I just looked back over the history on our website about what happened in the last few jobs reports, and of course Friday, MBS prices fell about a half a point on the news, a very better than expected jobs report. Going back to the one prior to that, on April 5th, MBS prices rose by about a half a point, 17/32 on what was then and still is a fairly weak jobs report, but it's gotten stronger, hasn't it? And then the one before that, on March 8th, MBS prices fell by a half a point on a better than expected jobs report for February. And all this is sort of an exaggerated reaction to these announcements, given that the jobs report has such a significant influence on the Fed and their bond buying program. So,
right.
you know, to the extent that the bond buying program could be altered based on news, the market moves. The you know, speaking of the Fed, they concluded their meeting on Wednesday and issued a statement. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the investors were looking for, but you could tell by the action in MBS prices leading up to the announcement that something more was expected. You know, some affirmation that the economy maybe is weaker and that the bond buying program was going to go on longer, or certainly push out the beginning of the slowdown, if nothing more. And the investors heard very little change in that Fed statement. The one major change that kind of got everyone's attention, and you would think that had been good for the MBS purchasers, investors, was that they added they can increase or decrease the level of bond buying as the market indicates they need to. But that wasn't enough, and as soon as the statement came out, MBS prices started to fall, and for the day they gave back all that they had rallied prior to that. Last week, the ECB had their meeting. It was of very little significance to our markets. They did cut their interest rates by a quarter, as what was expected. The other data that came out last week was, you know, generally a little weaker than was expected. Manufacturing, both the ISM and the Chicago PMI, fell short of expectations. Construction spending was a little bit weak. The nice part about last week's announcements was that pending home sales were stronger than expected. They were up a point and a half when only a half a point increase was expected. So, yeah, last week was a big week for news, and as much as was in last week's news, there's little this week. There are Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and those are the significant ones, the 10-year and the 30-year on Wednesday and Thursday. And other than that, it's just the weekly jobless claims. There's no other economic news on the schedule. So maybe we'll have a little less volatility this week, although today's not starting that way.
I was going to say, about the time you think there's no volatility, Joe, something comes in, and it may not be showing up on an economic calendar. It'll come out of Europe. It'll come out of Asia. We are in such a dynamic market. So I was listening to those jobs numbers and was wanting to know, they're around MBS quote line, what was the general feeling about this? I mean, it seemed to take a lot of people by surprise.
Well, you know what the first reaction here was is, if they're going to revise numbers 2 months old by as much as they did, how can you rely on it? How can you rely on it? It's kind of like the GDP report. I mean, it comes out and it's kind of important, but then they revise it and they revise it. Is the current, the most recently announced jobs numbers any better than the ADP numbers that come out? I mean, it's really surprising that they added that many jobs to the February and March data. So, I don't know if others are feeling that way. It certainly caused a reaction in the market. So
I certainly did.
Yeah, they're giving those numbers a good deal of credence. But, boy, that was a big adjustment.
Well, is there reason for suspicion?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? So no one is saying that you've read that no one's saying, nah, these numbers are – We got to question them. So they're solid.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't know, but I truly believe that they are not. There's not an effort to manipulate the numbers. They're being put together and they come out and it's a complicated thing and I guess it just makes you wonder if when they first come out if you need to rely on those as much as we have been.
Well, that's the point. So it's interesting. It's interesting to say the least. We're so glad that you're out there tracking all this. And I know when someone is solely focused on something as critical to our industry as this, I like to get your thoughts and opinions on different things. So you stay to the facts. I appreciate that so much. You're so disciplined to do that, Joe. Appreciate it so much for you and what you and everyone there at MBS Quote Line does to help keep us informed on what's going on. Again, folks, you may think it's quiet. Oh, we got a quiet week this week. We don't have to worry about it. You know, that's why you need MBS Quote Line. About the time you think it's going to be quiet, It's when things kind of get crazy. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break with Paul Mollo. Can't wait to hear what Paul's got to say.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Joe corrected me on the date. It is May 6th. Man, the calendar's flying by, so let's not rush it. It is May 6th. That's the broadcast, and we've got Paul Mollo giving us an update on what's going on in the headlines. Paul, good to have you take some time out of your busy day of tracking all the news to join us on the broadcast each week. Really appreciate it. It's good to have you here. By the way, compliments to you on your daily blog. This is really an outstanding. The way you put it together, the information that's in there, excellent job. Kudos to you guys.
Thank you, and it's usually right.
And it's,
I'm just
right.
Kidding. We try and always be right. It's www.imfnews.com. Again, imfnews.com.
Yeah, those three W's. Yeah, they all run, yeah. So what you got?
I
what
lose
are you following today?
Well, everyone knows the NBA secondary started in New York yesterday afternoon. John Bancroft of our staff is there. He filed a report, and we got some other news out of there. I guess, you know, it's not a surprise, but NBA and Stevens, he made a big speech this morning pushing for a single Fannie Freddie security. As a lot of people know, there's a pricing differential between, the Fannie security and the Freddie PC.
Yes.
Stevens is making a big push on that front. So that was interesting. Probably, you know, that's been on the radar for a while, but he seemed to make a big push for that. He also raised an issue, which he raised with us in one of our recent stories in Inside Mortgage Finance. You know, he wants open transparency at the FHFA, whereby, you know, if there's going to be some major rule change that affects how seller servicers operate coming out of the GSEs, he wants the industry to have some kind of open, you know, comment period, ability to, you know, weigh in, just like, you know, banking regulators will put out a proposal and ask for industry, you know, commentary. Currently, we don't see that in the mortgage regulators at FHFA, or very little of it. So I guess a big concern for everyone is, you know, the speculation about, you know, not just tighter underwriting, but higher capital requirements for
right.
seller servicers. And there's current delivery caps at Fannie, and there might be some at Freddie. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter out there. So that's one big story. And of course, one of the things that came out today, FIFA basically said coming next year, Fannie and Freddie can only buy QM loans, and I guess that's really not a surprise. But the announcement came a little earlier than some people were expecting, so that story's on our website. Charles Wisniewski of our staff wrote that. There's an AG lawsuit coming against B of A and Wells, apparently tied to the big robo settlement. They apparently aren't, you know, filing the settlement closely, and something's going to come of that later this afternoon. This is interesting. NationStar just filed on Friday for a huge debt offering, $1.3 billion. I mean, that's a huge number for a mortgage company. It's not new debt. It's new debt in the sense that it's going to replace existing debt. But to go out there in the market today and have the confidence to raise, you know, almost $1.4 billion, you must be feel pretty good about yourself and your future prospects, and B, your ability to borrow cheaper.
Yeah.
So that's
yes.
that caught us a little by surprise. That was interesting. FHA originations were up slightly in the first quarter. We got that. There's a bunch of interesting announcements out of the MBA secondary. David Fleig, F-L-E-I-G, he's out with a new company helping mortgage bankers raise money. That's called Steadfast Capital.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of stuff out there, so it's certainly not a slow week. I had left a lot of good stuff on the cutting room floor today as we put together the daily at www.imfnews.com. There was just a ton of good stories today.
There's a ton of good stuff. Yeah, I'm meeting with David. I can't wait. Well, at the secondary conference, I fly out tomorrow and be there. And I saw David Stevens' Facebook post here. We need to follow some of the leaders like Stevens, and he posts pretty proficiently on Facebook, so it's way tracking what's going on. But
I follow him. I'm not on Facebook, but I'm on Twitter, and he's always on Twitter posting stuff. It's very interesting.
He's learned how to use social media in a very effective way and getting the word out, and it is fast-moving, but Paul, I think one of the things that's so intriguing about your new blog and your website is the fact that it is so current. And it, you know, when you have published for, you know, the written publications in the past, you've written for various things, but the reality is it is getting faster and there's so many developments. Like you said, so much had to be left on the cutting room floor. But what you do draw our attention to is really significant. If you're not signed up for this blog, if you're not signed up for this website, if it's not one of those favorites on your web, you're making a mistake. Go to www.imfnews.com. imfnews.com. Great to have you on each week, Paul. Say hi to Guy and the team there. Appreciate it. I hope to run across John there at the conference while I'm there this week.
He'll be there. He's leaving in the afternoon, so hopefully you'll catch him.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to see him. Great to have you with us. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy week. Talk to you soon, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Alice, yeah, there's lots of going on in that news front. My gosh, and you look at the headlines as he's reading it. I'm looking at the website, and it's just, wow. And you're tracking everything regulation. It's impossible. Good to have you with us, Alice Alvey. And I know you've got a quick update, and then, of course, we're saving the last of the program, the best for the last, because we've got you covering just kind of going an overview of all the things. So give us a quick, just a little bit of a teaser, before we get to the hot topic segment, of some of the things that you have down the road.
Well, we had talked last week, Dave, that it seems like in the legislative world, it's not possible to fit it in a few minutes. And there are some older things, you know, so we try and report on here's what the latest is that happened this week. But there's a lot of existing stuff that we have to talk through. So we thought we'd take some time in today's broadcast after Mitch to kind of walk through where we're at today, what's coming down the pike, where you need to be. And between you and Joe and I, hopefully give the listeners some a little bit of a working path to follow as we look forward to 2013 and 2014 regulation implementation issues.
Well, you look at if there's just so much that's coming that we can get focused on what's coming, and did we really focus on, as we should have, some of the things that have already passed, and are those getting implemented? So that's why I think I'm so glad you have taken the time. And I'm probably mess up with your weekend a little bit to have you do all the preparation for this, but I do appreciate it very, very much. So stay tuned. We've got Alice Alvey giving a full update, much longer than just this one. So stay tuned. She's coming up here just in a short, short moment. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. By the way, check out our Facebook page. You can go over to davidlickin.com, get over and check the blog we have there, the Facebook. Doing better, keeping that up. Of course, we also on LinkedIn, so connect with us. Joe and Alice and I, we all are trying to do, use that more. David Stevens is just one posting machine out there, so on social media. So it's kind of setting a good bar up there for us. Well, we have the Prophet Doctor, who would normally be on in this segment, off making a house call. He's out working in Florida with a client. And a lot of things. He had a successful webinar last week and concluded a successful series of webinars on loan accounting. If you haven't gotten to go to the Campus MBA website, download it, and hopefully you acquire it and buy it, download it, and listen to it. Very critical and some great questions every time he does it. It just reveals how much people are confused on a lot of what's going on in the accounting world. So get it, get updated. Great to share with your staff. We also have Tony Garitano. He's at the Secondary Marketing Conference, and so we're going to be missing him. So we've got some of the regulars out, and I'll be flying to the Secondary Marketing Conference. For those of you that will be there, look forward to seeing you. Look me up, email me, text me. I text my cell phone, 512-632-2900, and I'll try to do best to connect with you while there. We were able to catch up with Mitch Kider on Friday and able to get him to share some thoughts about servicing regulation. Again, we've been doing a series on servicing, what the considerations that go into servicing. And, of course, you can't talk about servicing without talking about regulations. So let's listen to what Mitch and I discussed on Friday. Let me share those comments with you now.
Good to have Mitch Kider again with us. He's no stranger to this radio broadcast and someone that we go to when we want to get the facts of what is going on out there. Mitch, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be on your program.
Folks, we're talking about, as you know, the servicing, loan servicing, and regulations are in controlling or seeking to guide, control, or at least complicate all aspects of our business. And loan servicing is just the same. Mitch, give us, our listeners, kind of a broad update. Is loan servicing been left alone by the regulators, or is there certainly a lot of changes going on there as well?
Oh, no. The loan servicing certainly has not been left alone at all. There are many changes going on, and the CFPB has actually finalized servicing rules that will come into play in January of 2014. So there's a lot going on in that area, Dave.
80% of the complaints coming into, you know, CFPB is on the servicing side. So it's not surprising that they're going to double down or focus on servicing. So let's get into that, Mitch, and start giving, if you wouldn't mind, our listeners a bit of an overview and of some of the things that they need to be considering that they might not have on their radar.
Well, a lot's changing in servicing. At least a lot will change come January of 2014. The final servicing rules that the CFPB has published are both rules set under the Truth in Lending Act and rules set under RESPA. So some of these rules go to disclosures, such as the requirement for monthly mortgage statements. There is an exception for that, for coupons still being allowed on fixed-rate loans, but there's so much that will have to be on that coupon that most players will end up with monthly mortgage statements. There are warning letters and notices that need to be given before rate adjustments on hybrid ARM loans. There are rules that have been codified that deal with the issue of immediately crediting payments and how you deal with partial payments. And beyond that, though, Dave, the big issue in servicing really comes down to loss mitigation. You mentioned earlier that, in fact, the vast majority of the complaints that the CFPB receives has to do with servicing, and most of those deal with loss mitigation. Borrowers that are in trouble that think that they need a modification or some type of loss mitigation help.
So let's go back to a couple things you said earlier. When it comes to the statements, is the changes coming in the way the statements go out or what has to be on them or what?
The changes go to what has to be on a statement and a requirement that other than for fixed-rate loans, you have to send a monthly mortgage statement.
So it has to go out in the mail. It can't be done online or some other way. So they're wanting it to be
specific information in there. They want each statement to have a summary of the mortgage terms, the interest rate, the principal, a breakdown of the payments along those particular lines, the amount of and due date for the next payment, and any recent transaction history. There's a lot that they want on a specific statement, and they want it to be repetitive month in and month out.
So those old coupon books that we used to, those are gone. These are much more detailed.
These are much more detailed. I mean, technically, as I said, for fixed-rate loans, you can still use a coupon, but there's so much information that will need to go on that coupon. that, you know, ultimately that could be a little confusing and bothersome to the consumer. We'll see whether or not services continue on with coupons on fixed rate loans. For everything else, it is in fact on. And if the borrower becomes delinquent, if you were using a coupon, say, on a fixed rate loan, if the borrower becomes delinquent, you have to immediately go to monthly mortgage statements.
Let's talk about someone communicates with a borrower, whether it be in writing, whether it be over the phone, or by email. Any changes in the method or documentation or how they record that, I mean, or keep a track record of those comments or communications?
Well, as a practical matter, as a result of these new regulations, you're going to have to keep a written recordation of everything that you do. That really is the bottom line, because you got to document your file to show compliance with the new requirements. As a practical matter, everything's going to have to be notated. Does that mean that you can't still have telephone conversations with the consumer over specific issues? No, it doesn't mean that. You can have it. But there now are going to be specified dates by which you need to speak to that particular consumer. So, for example, if someone is delinquent, you have to make contact with that with that borrower by the 36th day. You have to give them something in writing by the 45th day. You have to provide a notice to them by the 45th day. So there are certain time deadlines that go to written requirements as well.
Let's talk about those comments in the computer system that's recording or that's making record notation of that conversation. Is that going to be continue to be allowed? Do they have to get me more specific in that?
Sure. If you are going to defend the actions that you took, you need to have a well-documented file along those particular lines. And cryptic notations simply aren't going to do it anymore. You're going to have to have a well-documented record of why you did what you did. And not only that, but if a consumer, and it's especially important in the instance in which you have a delinquent borrower. If the borrower is in fact delinquent, you're going to have a good record of how you contacted them, what information you otherwise provided them with, in order to defend your activities and to show that you otherwise complied. So cryptic notations in files are no longer going to work.
The listeners, for those of you that are already servicers out there, pay attention to the notes that are going into your system. For those of you looking to get into it, make sure you get a hold of like Mitch Kider at his firm to help you get the right verbiage down so that you have defendable, supportable actions should the loan to go delinquent.
Let me add one other point to that, and that is that in these new regulations, the CFPB has added their version of a single point of contact. And they haven't gone as far as some of these settlements are, where you have to have one person and only one person. You can put together a team of individuals. But those individuals will have to know everything about that consumer's file, and meaning not that they have to memorize it, but they need to be able to go straight to that file itself and see what those notations are, know it and understand it, and have an informed educational conversation with that delinquent borrower when they, in fact, call up with questions, issues, or concerns along those lines. And that's why it's all the more important to have that well-documented in cryptic notes. Again, just won't do it.
Cryptic notes won't cut it. That's exactly where I was going, the single point of contact. So there can be a group. They can go into a call group, but there needs to be a cohesive amount of communication, or at least if you've talked to John and you're now talking to Mary in that group, there has to be a sense that they know what's going on. Am I reading that correctly, or is it more strict than that?
No, you're reading it correctly. They have to know exactly what's going on with your file when, in fact, you call them. It could be a group of individuals, but these individuals have to have some authority. You have to give them the authorization to be able to make a phone call and actually have someone stop a foreclosure if they need to, because suddenly you have that completed modification application on your hands, and now you've got to take a look at it and not continue on with the foreclosure at that point in time. So it could be a group, but it's got to be knowledgeable. They have to know their customers, be able to access their files, and access whoever they need to in order to take appropriate actions and corrective actions to assist the borrower.
Mitch, a lot of consumers have complained to the CFPB that they have not been able to even get through, or they're left on hold, they're transferred, you got to call this. What changes in the timing, and what's it, along someone could be on hold? Is there any regulations on the getting in touch with when someone calls in, you have to be responding to that phone call within certain time frames?
Well, you know, those types of regulations, so to speak, really come about through litigation in the courts themselves. And a number of servicers have gotten into trouble, and some of the larger servicers that settled with the attorneys general of 49 states
right.
had some issues along those particular lines as well, and not being borrowers not being able to access their customer service departments on a timely basis. So while the new rules don't have specific requirements along those particular lines, as a practical matter, again, courts dictate that you have to be timely. What the new rules do address are error resolution and information requests. In the past, and even today, we've dealt with these qualified written requests. You would have to acknowledge within a 20-day period of time in writing, and then you would have to resolve the servicing-related issue that's raised within a 60-day period of time. Well, that's all going out the window. From now on, you will just have error resolution and information requests. And if the consumer notifies the servicer of a problem with an error, it's got to be acknowledged within 5 days, and it's got to be corrected generally within 30 days. In only extenuating circumstances can you take up to 45 days to correct that particular action. So the CFPB has really said, we want things done, we want it in writing, because we want to see the documentation, we want to know and understand how you are relating to your borrowers who are in trouble and do have those concerns, and we want it done timely, really quickly.
Once a loan has gone delinquent, it goes into just a host of new regulations, and what servicers or someone getting into servicing needs to consider. Get into some of that, if you would, please.
Well, you know, it starts off with early intervention, and studies have shown that that's the most important thing when it comes to a delinquent borrower, and the CFPB certainly has taken that on in their new regulations. Servicers have to make a good faith effort to notify delinquent borrowers early on in the process of loss mitigation options that are available to them and how they can get more information. They have to provide notice about the foreclosure process. And as I said earlier, they have to make an attempt to have live contact with a delinquent borrower no later than the 36th day of the delinquency, and then they have to send a written notice no later than the 45th day of the delinquency itself. And for those of you that may have difficulty in understanding or knowing exactly what to put in it, the CFPB has actually included model language that you can use along those particular lines. So you'll find that in the regulations as well.
But how can they download and look at these, at least start the process?
Well, they just have to go down to the regulation itself, and, you know, we can get you a citation for those particular regulations. These are part of RESPA, so they're Regulation X of the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. And, again, they're model language forms that are included therein. Another good resource, in all honesty, is the CFPB's website themselves. You can get the model language right off the CFPB's website. You go to cfpb.gov.
All right. Subservicers. We have so many that are getting into servicing that are using subservicers. Talk to us about if an independent mortgage bank or a bank uses a subservicer, are they relieved of all this? In other words, no worry, we outsource that. We don't have to worry about these regulations.
No, not at all. Not at all. Remember, they're called subservicers because they're doing the job on behalf of the servicer. But the servicer of record is responsible for the manner in which that servicing is done. And under the CFPB's new vendor management rules, a subservicer is a vendor. And it is the responsibility of the servicer themselves to conduct their own due diligence, do their own review of their subservicer, and to make sure that all of the consumer protection statutes and regulations that are in place are being complied with, because ultimately the servicer themselves will in fact be held liable if that's not the case.
I bring that up. I know that, but I ask the question because I just want people to hear that. And a lot of people have the misconception, well, I've hired Dove & Mule or Cenlar or one of the other companies out there, and you know they're handling it. I don't worry about that. You better, folks. You need to have it double-checked. And also, you need to have someone come in and do third-party validations of that. That's something our firm does. Mitch, I'm assuming you do some of that work too, third-party validation, make sure people are compliant, that the subservicer is doing compliance and are meeting these new regulations satisfactorily.
That's exactly right. You need a vendor management plan, and your vendor management plan is going to differ based on the type of vendor that you have. So when you're subservicing, you need a pretty extensive plan because the risk to the consumer out there is high. And so you're going to need a plan that includes due diligence. It includes a review of all their policies and procedures on a regular basis. It includes contractual language with your subservicer that gives you the ability to terminate if they're not complying with the law. There are many things that a lender must do watching over the shoulder of their subservicer.
What is the most important thing that you would want our listeners to know when it comes to regulations related to servicing that we might not have already covered?
Well, I think the most important thing is that they need to find out exactly what these regulations say and do so they can implement the changes. January of 2014 is closer than you think it is.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, there's a lot that needs to be done, and it involves changing your procedures, and it involves changing some things that are on your system itself. So now is the time to start that process if you haven't already begun.
If you want to make sure that it's being done correctly, you need to get a hold of Mitch Kider and get a hold of him at his firm. What's the most effective way, if they have questions, just based on what we've already gone through, what's the best way to reach them?
You know, people can call my office. They can call, and I'll even give you my direct dial. It's 202-557-3511. They can reach me that way. You can always reach me by email as well. It's kiter@thewbkfirm.com.
Again, Mitch's direct dial phone number is 202-557-3511. Mitch, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be here with us today and sharing with us on this important topic.
Thank you, Dave. It's my pleasure.
We look forward to having you back again soon. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Appreciate Mitch taking time out of his busy day to be there with us. Alice and Joe, want to get your thoughts before we head over into Alice's segment talking about all that's going on in regulation. There's so much there. Joe, let's start with you. Your thoughts as you listen to that interview?
It's just a very complicated thing, which was previously a very automated process is becoming less automated, and it's complicated. It's going to be important to really have good systems. And I'd ask you, Dave, or are the system providers ready to do that?
I said, at the different times I've owned a software company many, many, many years ago, and we had loan servicing a part of it. I can just tell you right now, I am so glad I don't own a software company because I look at all that's coming down on them. And, I mean, Alice, you are just having to stay up on top of it. Can you imagine having to program constantly all these changes that are coming? It's just got to keep those guys up late at night.
Well, and of course, you've got every company has its own process and its way of doing things today.
Yeah.
And that's the message, you know, as I'm listening to Mitch, he really is saying the same things that we're saying on the operations side. Process matters. You have to have the procedure in writing. Everyone has to do the same thing. You have to have it fully documented. And if I'm a software provider on the servicing side, especially that whole customer communication
yes.
loop and trying to keep that documented and consistent, oh, that's a big challenge.
You said, Joe, you, Alice, and I all have run servicing systems and worked, you know, collections and been on that computer system writing notes. And you know the cryptic comments that put in there, the codes we have, LMTC, left message to call, all
right.
these things that we just type in there. And you can't do that now because you have got to assume at some point in time a jury is going to be looking at it. And so he said cryptic notes won't work and it's got to be defensible. So fascinating, fascinating stuff. Joe, would you go into servicing today in knowing all that's out there? I'm coming to you, Al, same question.
The economics are so compelling it's hard not to. But at the same time, you better have a good vendor in mind. And you better have somebody that's competent to oversee that vendor, as Mitch was saying.
Yeah, it's so true. Alice?
Well, you know, and I was thinking of the companies who, like Joe said, from an economic standpoint, over a year ago or 2 years ago decided to get into it. You know, the folks who first stuck their toe in it, and now they've built up that servicing portfolio and going, okay, do I want to stay in it right now? Because, you know, have I reached a scale that I can make this effective for me? And, you know, I think I can think of a lot of good companies that are going to say, yes, I'm staying in it because the economics are good. But those looking to start it today, I think you've got a lot of cleanup, and a subservicer is probably the best answer to start with as you're learning everything going on this year.
Well, that's such a good segue because we got David Allison of Dovenmule coming on next week, and we're going to be talking about that. What are the proper expectations? How can you work effectively with a servicer? So I'm really looking forward to having David Allison on next week and hear his thoughts and his take from a servicer's perspective. So fascinating. I mean, servicing like regulation, we could just go on and on and on about it. But we want to get Alice over into the talking about everything that has been going on. You take, you know, 5-8 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes at the beginning of the broadcast. We can't cover it enough. So we've got 18 minutes, Alice, to cover all that's going on. So give us a rundown of what has passed, what we should be looking at. Help us.
Well, I think, Dave, you and I talked before the show that the best place to start is where you have to be at today. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but I think maybe spending a minute or two on it. You know, you've mentioned in talking with folks that they don't even have the Mortgage Acts and Practices advertising piece from Truth in Lending that went into effect a while ago.
A year ago.
And so now they're, you know, they're going, what do you mean MAP? And I thought, oh, you mean the 8-page checklist I had to make? Because there's so much in that component. And then also the unfair, deceptive, and abusive acts and practices. So CFPB's already been out there. I think everybody paid attention to LO Comp. And, you know, for the most part, I'm not getting as many questions on GFE and Truth in Lending in their forms today. But the advertising one, you were saying you were just talking to somebody recently who didn't even realize.
I was talking to someone. I said, so tell me about your MAPs. I mean, when we do these warehouse reviews and we're out there checking on regulations and it's a quick check. It's we're going through a checklist. But, I mean, the warehouse lenders want to make sure these guys are they get a sense that they're being compliant. So you run through the various regulations. You go, yeah, we got that. Yeah, we got that. We're good there. And you bring up MAPs. And you go, MAPs? And they get that head turns a little bit and cocks. And you go, obviously a question mark forms over their heads. They go, oh, that advertise. Oh, yeah. And then they stumble around. They go, no, I'm not sure that we have that down. Well, that is one, Alice, that is just going to could create so much liability. The plaintiff bar, those guys that are out suing the mortgage industry, love hearing just how certain key regulations like this, especially when it comes to borrower representation, because that's, Alice, where this one focuses at. Mm-hmm. What did you represent? What did you tell them? And what did they get? Correct.
And that includes the blogs. You know, that includes anything you're doing in Facebook, Twitter. So for some companies, they say, well, you know, I don't advertise. But you know what? Every company advertises just by virtue of their website, right? Everybody has a website. You've got probably staff members that, especially if you have on-the-street sales folks who are trying to be mortgage experts in some form of social media, you've got to be careful with everything they're saying. I had a loan officer come up to me, and she just placed a small business card-type ad in a local symphony publication in her community. And she said, you know what? I just heard about all this stuff. I didn't realize it. I think I got everything. But, you know, I was in such a hurry, I didn't send it to the compliance officer. In her teeny little ad, she had 3 violations. And,
wow.
You know, so it's that
simple, innocent things. Yeah. Joe, you thought you've managed loan officers before, and you know, loan officers sometimes like herding cats. I don't mean that for you, loan officers listening. We know we love you. I was one, and consider myself at heart. But herding us sometimes is in controlling that activity is a real challenge. And now we have, since I was doing it, we have social media. We have all these like symphony, simple innocent things like that. You've got to have the T's crossed. Joe, your thoughts?
Well, I think back about the issues we had as the internet became, you know, the websites, individual loan officer websites became all the fad, and it was just very difficult to even know they were out there, much less know what was on them. And it took a whole staff of people to monitor the web and to monitor names and references and to try to find those. And I can only imagine, and even then, what was on there was not as significant as it is today. So,
It's the bright lines that they've drawn. If you must do this, you must do that. If you don't, then you're not in violation. If you're not in violation, then the consequences, Alice, back to that company, should they get sued, should they get examined, is significant. And so I just want our listeners not to be in panic mode, but just be informed and going, you know what, we really better go back and double check that. So. Any
I've got a great checklist if they want it. Send me an email, alv@mortgage-u.com. I've got a great checklist on the MAP advertising requirements. So just send me an email. I'd be happy to send you that. And you know what? It works great for a policy, too. So you can just go, hey, here's my policy. So
you're
glad to help.
You're giving that out? What? That's why I like you so much. Let's get into talking about some. Let's talk about qualified mortgages. You draw these circles, and you have your notes up here, and I've got it up here on my screen. I love your circles. Now, this is black and white, so I can't see the color effect, but give us a little bit of an overview of what we need to be talking about. And Joe, jump in here with any questions anytime along the way here.
Okay,
so the QM is the one I'll start with, right? Your ability to repay. So we have what is a qualified mortgage, and then within that, I have to establish ability to repay. So we've got defining a QM as a product, and the fact that it has to be fully documented, no teaser rates, no excess upfront points and fees, and that's your three-point limitation, no toxic features, has to be a 30-year term maximum, no balloons except for small creditors, which we're still working on, and then this DTI maximum of 43% that we're working with. So I always talk about the green zone. If my product met the green zone, then I have a qualified mortgage. And within that, I need to meet all of those requirements. So the 43 DTI starts to step into also proving that my customer had the ability to repay. And if I've done all that, my loan is in a safe harbor from a litigation standpoint. I've been presumed to meet the requirements. Then I call the yellow zone. In that yellow zone, I've triggered a high-priced mortgage loan, as we know it today, where my APR is 1.5% higher than the average prime offered rate by Freddie Mac as it's published. So if I trigger the yellow zone, but I've met all the requirements to be in the green zone except for just that APR, then that's my cautionary stay where there's the rebuttable presumption of compliance. And then red zone, I don't meet QM requirements. So one of the big questions that we have all been that is pending right now, there is a proposed amendment out there, and the comment period is open until June 3rd. And this is the part about defining some of those underwriting components for calculating that DTI. You can go to the CFPB website. It is the title of RESPA and TILA Amendments. Select that, and you can comment on this. This is a big issue to comment on because how you calculate DTI and what happens if I sell the loan to Fannie Mae and Fannie audits the loan and they say, we don't agree with your income calculation. We need you to buy the loan back. So the proposal talks about two different angles. Well, if you're being asked to buy the loan back for something completely unrelated to income and DTI, then just the fact that it becomes a repurchase by Fannie and Freddie does not now disqualify it as a QM. You still carry your QM status. But if Fannie disagrees with your income calculation, you now have a problem. So I guess my question for you all is, have you had a chance to talk with lenders on, does that mean I'm going to be super conservative, I want everything in the green zone, even in a potential repurchase, and I'm not going to close a loan above a 43 DTI?
Joe, I'll go
ahead
and first.
I was going to say it might be that because you can make a small error or have a difference in calculation, it might not be 43, it might be 40.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
That people say, I just won't go above that in case I've made a small error or somebody can challenge my judgment. So it's going to be even more strict than the regulation.
I think it's because of the cut. Go ahead, Alice.
No, go ahead. That's right.
I was going to say it's the consequences. If you bump up to the 43 and you make a mistake and you're actually at 43.8, you go to 44. That has a consequence. And I think what I'm hearing as we're going about doing these reviews with the various lenders, or we get the various lenders calling, or when I'm speaking, I'm doing so much conference speaking right now, I'm getting a lot of people coming up and say, well, what are you seeing lenders do? Which goes to this issue, leadership. People are looking for leadership. They're looking for the Alice Alves, the Joe Farrs. What are you hearing? So there's a lot. The blogs are alive. I think that's why we are now, I don't know what we're up to, and over 5,000 people on the LO Compensation Rules blog. It's just extraordinary how many people there. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for direction. They want to hear the discussion, and I think that's why our radio program is doing so well. So to the point of, Joe, I think they are landing inside of the 40%, the 43%, to make sure just in case something goes awry, because the consequence of being beyond 43 or whatever it settles in at is going to be so significant, it could literally put thinly capitalized, even though capital requirements are going up, thinly capitalized companies at risk of going out of business.
Here's what one of my customers was talking to me about. Obviously, if you're a lender, right? And so you kind of go to the, well, is it saleable? And if I, you know, so if I've sold it, I've sold it servicing release, the loan has gone from my books, and that other entity has to repurchase it, it still could potentially come back to you if now it becomes a non-QM loan. And one of my customers was saying, Alice, it's harder to be right in this business.
Yes,
because
that's
there
a great
still
statement.
Seems to be people who are willing to do it wrong in order to get the quick dollar. So, I you know, when we all sit in a room and we go, hey, if we all do the same thing, they can't write us all up, right? I don't think you can get that philosophy with the 43 DTI.
No.
You've got to say, what's the right risk for your company?
Joe?
One of the things I read today is that Fannie and Freddie are only going to buy QM loans. And then I thought they defined QM loans.
Right. But it does say in this memo here, in this lender letter, that they'll continue to purchase loans that meet the underwriting and delivery eligibility requirements, for example, existing DTI ratios. So they listed the product characteristics of a QM, but then in parentheses diverted related to DTIs weren't specifically going to change. So I don't know if we'll see, you know, DU and LP tighten up a little bit from their 45s that you can get through now. But, so it was a little confusing, but it seems to be just clarifying products. And then, of course, the 3%. So if we move off of the DTI into the 3% issue, we still are also waiting for feedback from CFPB on that three-point test calculation. As you know, we are very unsure as to whether the payment to the loan officer is going to be included in that 3%. I do want to tell you that I've followed – you know, I do a few speaking engagements too, and I was following the CFPB at another conference in Kentucky, and they were saying, you know, that they didn't feel that it was going to be all-inclusive of even the payment to the loan officer, because that would be the first time we ever went off the GFE for trying to put in a fee, right? Now you got to go to payroll records, which is crazy. We keep hearing rumblings that they may not land on that and include it, but, you know, we don't have anything in writing yet.
Would the origination fee count and the loan officer's commission count?
Well, the way Dodd-Frank was worded, the answer to that question could be yes. And that's what the comment period is open for clarification. CFPB does have authority to modify that. It's just a matter of how are they going to choose to modify that. And it does seem like they're they're leaning on that way, again, from, you know, different articles and folks we talked to that said they're not going to necessarily do a double dip, right? If you're already charging, mm-hmm. counting all the points and everything on the GFE, why should you double dip into the LO's pay?
Go ahead. There's so much
so
to
I was
cover
just gonna
here,
say,
Allison.
Those are the two main pieces. I mean, we've got those pieces pending. We certainly don't have our new GFE until yet. We've got several regulations we haven't even heard from them on yet. New HMDA data fields, new disclosures for FHA, just to name a few. And obviously the new GFE until is a big one, and the software companies are moving forward as if those forms are it. They're already starting the programming, which I was kind of going rats. I was hoping they would be our scapegoat.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't get it programmed in time. It's not our fault. Can't we make it 2015? So.
Someone just sent me a message, asked, ask Alice if you feel that as these are being written, or as they're written, that are even the ones that are passed, is there so much ambiguity that we are just really going to be facing more litigation? It seems like there is the ambiguity. There's not these in their efforts to even their best efforts to write it clearly, they're not being, it doesn't seem like it, Alice. So we have a listener asking you,
yeah.
Is it just the new world that we live in that litigation is going to be a part of our life? And because
it does feel like there's new exposure. I think, Joe, you brought this up before. The fact that we've always had exposure, but now that it's all in writing, it actually builds a roadmap for the attorneys on, you know, where
right.
to go after. But you can't let it freeze you. You know, this is still a great business if you document your files well and, you know, you're doing good loans, you know, that meet the requirements. You're going to be fine. What I would say to people is you've got to get your house in order now. Spend time checking everything that you've got written policies and you are following them down to every little letter. You've got that done. And then there are some you can implement now. So, for example, the high cost appraisal rule, you're probably not going to trigger a lot of those loans. You know, you're not going to be having a lot.
Right.
A lot of companies don't even do a high-priced mortgage loan. Get that one written. Get the procedures put in place. You know, start looking at some of the rules from that aspect. Which are the ones that are really going to impact not impact my process today, and get those in writing so you have a framework. Start there. But don't
we
do nothing feeling frozen because there's so much out there.
We have someone that's listening who's actually in the software side of it that's listening on the broadcast, sent me a quick message and said, Dave, for use the high-cost appraisal rule, for example, does Alice feel that we can write code now, that this is not going to shift and change between now and January 18th in 2014 when it goes in effect?
Well, from a software perspective, I would say they probably, on the high cost appraisal rule, I'd have to double check. I'm certainly not here to be a code expert, and that's up to
right,
the software companies. When I was speaking about write your procedures, I mean for the company itself on,
right.
You know, so you may not be able to get down to field level and screen level procedures as your software company, certainly well within their right to not be done on any of this yet, but you can start to say, if we don't even do these loans, we can put our own written policy in place.
Right.
Or perhaps you maybe do some of these and you say, you know what, this is enough for me to not do them. What procedure or high-level policy do I have to put in place to make sure I catch the loans that have these appraised value triggers that, you know, mean my customer gets, a second appraisal. I have to order a second appraisal. So those types of things you can at least get in writing and say, who's going to do it and where am I going to put it?
We've got the HOPA final rule coming up effective January 10th. Folks, I can't keep track of this. I'm reading her notes, so it's just impossible. So thank you for the very detailed notes here. By the way, you're offering those out for people to be able to read too, are you not?
These, I just have some short notes on each of the regulations that I provided, and I do have the color version too.
You do have the color version.
Okay,
so the hopeful final rule. I mean, anything there? I'm looking at 2 minutes, or just about 47 seconds here before we have to start.
No, that's just a revision of Reg Z. So that's a good example of another one. Just get it in writing. Get it out of the way that you've got the written policy. You know, I understand your computer systems are not ready for it yet, but, you know, identify it. Make sure you say, okay, you know, we'll watch for these triggers in closing, or we're going to double check it just prior to processing. You know, put some of that in place now, and then you'll be ready when the other stuff hits at the end of the year.
Joe, there's you look at this and how our world has changed, and your party comments as we get ready to go out the door.
Just have a great compliance staff.
No,
we didn't even talk about the training. I mean, it's one thing to have the policies and procedures out there. It's another thing to get everyone aware of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like that you said plural staff. It's compliance is not – it's more than a one-person job these days.
Well, it takes a partner. It takes a team to do it. And Alice Almy's got one of the best training reputations in the industry. Why does the NBA keep turning to her for what she's doing? It's because she's good, folks, and she keeps your folks motivated, keeps everyone motivated, gets you the news without getting lost in the details. Great job, Alice. Thank you so much, folks.
You're
it's
welcome.
Been great to have you with us. We have David Allison next week, so stay tuned. We look forward to having you back next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.